Okay, I think we're live on YouTube. Can you guys out in Skype land confirm that we are live on YouTube? Can you confirm that you can hear me?
We can hear you.
We can hear you, and we are streaming.
Okay, good, because we're having some little red lights, and we're not sure, so we might be having trouble. And if that's so, then I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yep. We are indeed live on YouTube.
Okay. Sad show. Boy, that was something. I know, Alex, you had something to add at the end. Unfortunately, we ran out of time, but please share with us what you wanted to say about Bob Fass.
I mean, it's obvious to me. It's just such a force of WBAI. I remember him from a long time ago with the 505 8th Avenue days.
Oh, yeah.
Was that three or four stations ago, three or four offices ago?
Well, let's see. It was 505 8th Avenue, then we went to Wall Street, then we went up to City University in Harlem, and then we wound up in Brooklyn. I didn't want to say that, but we wound up in Brooklyn. But that's where we finished. That's where we are now, even though we're not there now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. But I mean, it's just for so many years, for so many decades. I mean, the guy's been, you know, he was an organizer, he's an agitator, he's a commentator, he's a creator. Obviously, an inspirer of so many that I think the after effects of his life will probably be felt for a very, very long time. It's like throwing a huge stone into a big pond. I think the ripples of Bob Fass's life will be felt for probably decades, maybe even another century.
Well, especially if 10,000 hours of tape are being digitized at Columbia University, that is just terrific to know. And it's so important to save these things, to save radio, to save television broadcasts. They're time capsules of our past. And I always have this enthusiasm whenever I find some other collection. And, if you're somebody who records things, record everything. Don't edit out things, you know. Let people do that later. Because, you know, for instance, somebody who records television broadcasts, so many people edit out the commercials. The commercials are the most interesting part. The programs you can get on DVD, but the commercials, you can't see those anymore. And they tell so much of, a story of our culture. Same thing with radio, you know, just grab it all. Grab the snafus, the sign-offs. It's all magic, and it brings back such memories.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, as a kid, I wanted to fit as much of my programs onto my tapes as I could, so I edited out the commercials. And, all those tapes are long thrown away because, like I said, you can get the TV shows that were on them by normal means nowadays. But had I taped the commercials back then, like, you can go on YouTube now and see, like, just these strips of commercials that people did save. You can go on archive.org as well and see these strips of just regular programming people did save, these ephemeral things that nobody at the time thought would be worth keeping. But, of course, they're fascinating to look back on. Yesterday, I was talking to Gila about, like, a random phrase that came up in some commercial that was on all the time when I was a kid, and today I was able to dig that up online and show it to her. And, it's really quite a feeling.
What was the random phrase? I got to ask, what was the random phrase?
It was a company that would do, like facades on buildings, and they would come back to this refrain where they would announce, "Brick face, stucco and stone face." and those were their specialties, but they just said it in such a way that like hit me when I was a child, and I was able to hear it again, and it was special.
Wow.
So the thing for me is I grew up in a different part of the country. I didn't know about Bob Fass when I was growing up, but learning about him again in the last few days, I did not know that he debuted Alice's Restaurant to the world on his show. And we were actually just talking about Alice's Restaurant a couple days ago. I was telling Rob we had a songbook in my house, and it had Alice's Restaurant in it. It had sheet music for the choruses, and then just the entire, like, monologue section was just written out. It said, keep playing this, read this. It was amazing. But thinking about, you know, also listening to him pitching for the station, that the phone numbers are different, the address is different, and the cost of a membership is different.
Not by that much.
Not by much. No, it's an amazing savings. But the fact that we were listening to this show from when my parents were teenagers.
Wow.
And my parents were teenagers, and not that much has changed overall. And hearing the spirit that he brought to it, and also what it took to get between Tiny Tim and a microphone,
mm-hmm.
was huge. He shut Tiny Tim down from playing. And I don't know if people realize what a difficult thing that was to do.
Well, hearing Tiny Tim helping to sign the station off, that, you know, live in the studio, that was all going on live. That's magic.
That was the most incredible thing. And we've been watching Laugh-In. Laugh-In is streaming on Amazon. And we got to see, like, when Tiny Tim was introduced on Laugh-In. And knowing that that was coming down the pike soon, it's an amazing thing to, you know, locate it in history. Also, before I forget, if you want to call us, you can call us right now. But also, if you can't get through on the phone, we are monitoring our Twitter feed. So if you want to tweet at us, at Hacker Radio Show, we're keeping an eye on it. Also, you can call us at 802-321-HACK or toll-free at 833-755-2600.
That's right. And if you have any stories that you want to share with either of the people that we've been remembering tonight, Dan Kaminsky or Bob Fass, please call us and share those stories. This is certainly the time to do that. Talking about Tiny Tim, though, I think when he debuted on Laugh-In, I think that was well after he was on Bob Fass's show. Am I correct in that?
It was about a year, I think.
Because his album was released in 1968, and that show was from 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what she was saying.
Yeah.
It was after? Yeah, I think that's after. How I heard what you were saying, but
yeah, I mean, it was coming, but even I also fell down a little Wikipedia hole. I was looking up Tiny Tim in the break between the show and overtime. And yeah, he'd been performing around New York City for 4 or 5 years already. He really stepped into that persona in 1963, but to hear how, you know, solid it was even at that time, it's just absolutely incredible. And also, if you haven't seen the episode of Laugh-In where Tiny Tim debuts and you get to watch Dan Rowan and Dick Martin reacting to Tiny Tim, it is absolutely incredible. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's I remember that as a small child. But there was just so much incredible history that went out over the airwaves, as far as, you know, you mentioned Alice's Restaurant. I sure hope there are tapes of that somewhere. As I mentioned Bob Dylan, you know, having him as a relatively unknown artist, Richie Havens, Joni Mitchell, Muddy Waters, Frank Zappa, they were all on the show. He gave airtime to poets like Allen Ginsberg, Gregory Corso, staged a recitation of Waiting for Godot, and he once brought in, this is great, he once brought in people he identified as representatives of Stamp Out Smut, which was an organization opposed to the performances of Lenny Bruce. And then, underscoring his own political slant, he followed up with a recording of a Lenny Bruce monologue. Oh, yeah. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. Kyle, is the ringer on? Because I know we sometimes turn it off. So I want to make sure. Okay. It wasn't on before.
I had it off during some of the New York Times obits.
Yeah.
It was interrupting.
It was interrupting. So
we got a call from 000000.
That means it's a toll-free number. Yeah. I think somebody called on a toll-free number. Well, the phone number again, 802-321-4225. Gail, what was the toll-free number again?
It's 833-755-2600.
Okay. Operators are standing by, so if there's something that you'd like to say to us, please call now. Getting back to Dan Kaminsky, were there any other stories? I have an excerpt, actually, another excerpt I can play of him at Chaos Communication Congress in, I believe, 2010. We can get to that. We'll take this phone call, then we can get to that. But any other stories, please share. Good evening. You're on Off Local Overtime. Go ahead.
Well, hello there.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Sad to hear Sorry, I didn't expect to get on so fast. Sorry to hear about Bob Fass.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I had almost forgotten about him. I slept through so many Monday classes in high school because I was up all night Sunday night listening to him, and I think Steve Post.
Wow.
So long ago, I don't remember whether they were together. I remember Marshall Efron used to show up.
Wow. So he was on Sunday night. I remember him being on Thursday night, but he used to do a show every night, I believe, right?
Boy, I don't remember that. I just remember being a wreck on Monday. A happy wreck, but
uh-huh,
a wreck. Uh-huh. Oh, boy, that was three lifetimes ago for me.
That's amazing. Any other memories of BAI or radio in general you can share?
No, just once that I called in when I was like an early teenager. And I was so petrified when I finally got on the radio that I couldn't talk. But other than that, nothing. I mean, I've been with WBAI almost all my whole life, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
and you, and I shouldn't ask you this because it sucks, so you can hang up on me. Will we ever hear from Bernie again?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. He's in the community. He'll, you know, it's just a question of how many people can you put on the air at the same time. Sometimes there's too many, and we always, you know, we try to keep it fresh. But he's still out there. He's still out there, and I'm sure whenever the next hope is going to be, not the conference call, the next hope, but the hope that follows in history, he will be there as well, and in front stage and all that.
Well, good. I miss his voice. Anyway, I'll let you go and somebody else talk, and I'm glad you're there, and you've been part of my life for a long time.
Well, hopefully a positive influence.
Well, I don't know about that.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah. Should have quit while
I was
ahead.
Well, the first caller.
Yeah.
Very honorable. Absolutely. I mean, pretty incredible to hear about this. I mean, it just goes to show, you know, the impact that you can make in somebody's life. I mean, honestly, it's really nice to hear somebody say that. I mean, Emmanuel, if you think about it, I mean, for God's sake, this show is going to be 33, right? Isn't that the case? Is that right, Rob? You're the other show.
Hold on a second. Our first show is 88, so that would be, yeah, I guess it is 33.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's 33. It's pretty incredible. I mean, that's a huge impact. And tying that back to Dan, too, is the fact that I think it's also obviously a testament to him personally, but also the culture and the type of people that are attracted to the hacker culture that in a life as short as 42 years can make such a huge impact like that and have such a far reach and have people memorialize you with, you know, across the entire world, across the internet, on radio stations and YouTube, everywhere. I think it's again, it's a real testament to the spirit of being a hacker, and that we're the type, I guess, like the Kurgan said in Highlander, right? You know, we'd rather burn out than fade away, right? You know, we just keep going, full steam, as long as we possibly can.
And that is probably the first time the Highlander has ever been quoted on this show.
But certainly not the last.
Really? Okay, fine.
Take care of yourselves, though. I mean,
yes.
You gotta, you know, it's great to burn the midnight oil and, you know, go hard with your pursuits and so forth, but it's important to also know when to rest as well.
That's right. 802-321-4225. So I'm looking at statistics here, and I don't know if this means anything. Dropped frames 49.8%. That sounds bad, doesn't it? But, of course, do we need frames? Because this is YouTube, I know, but we're not broadcasting video.
It's something with our connectivity. I'll look into it. But I think some of the upgrades and some changes that we've been working on.
I hate upgrades. Upgrades always cause problems. I hate upgrades.
There's been some tinkering, and I have to give some devices a good, you know, look at them the right way or something. I don't know.
Okay. Rob, you can confirm we're still on broadcasting, okay, right?
We are indeed broadcasting, and we sound okay.
Okay, good. Well, a lot of listeners be the judge of that. And we have one on the phone. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi.
How you doing?
Bob Fass is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to engineer for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been an experience.
Mm-hmm.
With the number of guests, number of people who passed through that room, that is no small task.
Hmm. I remember he gave me instructions once. I was talking to him about people playing the guitar squeaking from chord to chord. And he told, which, you know, that's a mistake, and it's an ear sore. And he said, oh, I like it. It gives...
Hello?
Real.
Oh.
And,
call waiting.
I want you to mic it when somebody's coming into play. I want you to arrange the mic so it'll be pointed right at where the squeaks are coming from so that they'll... be as prominent as possible unless the person playing tells you to do it differently. So not too long later, a person came with a guitar, and I was setting them up, and I asked them, do you want me to magnify the squeaks or set it up otherwise to minimize them? And, you know, he was looking at me, you know, this is a ridiculous question. I'm saying, I'm repeating my question several times over because I'm saying, if you don't tell me not to, then I have to put it so that they're magnified because that's Bob's standing instructions unless you tell me to do it differently. And he actually thought that I was threatening him. But I finally got through, and he said that he didn't want them magnified. He wanted them minified.
So was this a famous minified. Artist, maybe, that went on to stardom that you had this encounter with?
I'm afraid I do not remember who it was. I think it was probably someone who was already well-known, though.
But it could have been Frank Zappa or Bob Dylan. It could have been.
I don't think it was either of them.
Hmm.
I don't think I had any mega hit people on to play like that. But you know, I got him to say he wanted me to do it the sensible way, and I did it that way. And then I had to explain to Bob, and I explained to him again. You know, he thought I was threatening him because nobody wants their mistakes advertised. And he said, but nobody plays without mistakes. I said, Julian Bream. That's ridiculous. Of course I do. Who? Julian Bream. I've never heard of Julian Bream. Well, the other guy had heard of Julian Bream.
Well, you know, knowing what I knew from Bob, he would relish the imperfections and see the beauty in them. I could see him having that argument.
Quite clearly.
I'm sorry?
He said so quite clearly.
Uh-huh,
yes.
Uh-huh. And you know, his whole show was
artists don't like having their mistakes magnified.
No, even for the most part.
Bob likes it.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, Bob, think of Bob as sort of a documentarian, you know, just capturing everything as it was happening. So, yeah, he would want the imperfections along with the perfect parts.
Hmm. But obviously the artists don't want to be unnecessarily smeared by being mic'd in the least flattering manner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. Well, thanks for that memory, and we didn't know that that you were the engineer, one of the engineers for Bob Fass. So that's something incredible. That's definitely a great story.
Thank you. This is Eleanor Elizabeth Foreman, who was engineering for him.
Okay. That's you.
That's me.
Okay, great. Well, our condolences for everybody, you know, staff and listeners of WBAI. We lost a giant, a true giant this week.
Yeah, I'm wondering, will Radio Unnameable go on in an unrecognizable form?
Well, you know, when we lost Grandpa Al Lewis, his Saturday show went on for quite some time afterwards, so it's entirely possible. Yeah, that's right. We had Grandpa Al Lewis on our airwaves. BAI has some strange history, and that was one of the best parts.
He came up behind me and punched me in the head once.
Oh, that's a different story for a different time. I don't want to hear about this now. But thanks.
And when I complained it hurt, he did it again to show that it didn't really hurt.
Well, he should have done it to his own head the second time.
Badly, too.
Wow. All right. Well, I guess you have stories for a lot of people at BAI, and we should definitely we should compile them into some kind of other documentary. Thanks for the call, and we're going to move on. But wow. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. What do you guys think?
I think I could definitely see the appeal of, as Eleanor was saying, you know, the appeal of having the mistakes hearable, just because you want to know that there's a reason to have the person live in studio there, and it's a real thing you're listening to rather than just putting on a record. But also, it's all part of how Bob Fass, like, he was at the station since the very beginning, and he... like the spirit of what he was doing and how he was doing it is so embedded in the way we prefer to do things at WBAI. Like, this isn't a glitzy Hollywood production. This isn't like some massive, radio concern. This is a bunch of people who are as eclectic and interesting as the city we're all in. Putting bits of ourselves out there and the things that interest us and the things we encounter and sharing it with the listenership.
Amen.
And it's community radio.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have a caller, speaking of listeners. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
I'm a little nervous. I've been listening to you guys since probably 1999.
Wow.
Off and on. I'm in Virginia, but there was one time where I was driving through New York and caught it on live. It's something I always wanted to do. so I had a question that's a little bit off topic.
Sure.
I wanted to get you guys' opinion on Richard Stallman rejoining the Free Software Foundation.
Wow. That's a can of worms.
Yeah, I know. I kind of thought maybe you wouldn't want to talk about it, but...
Well, I mean, it's just a question of, will we ever stop talking about it?
What makes you ask? What's your concern in this?
I'll bet it's curiosity, but
curious.
Yeah. As I can see from reading into it, the backlash against it just doesn't seem justified to me.
We don't have a unified stance on anything. You know, everybody has their own opinion. Personally, I can't see the advantage to having somebody who is in the midst of all kinds of negativity, which persists. I don't see why you would put yourself out there and double down. It doesn't seem right. It seems like you're just making it harder on a lot of other people who now feel conflicted because, you know, they want to support what the organization does, but they can't support what the organization is doing in this particular case. It just doesn't seem like it was thought through. And unfortunately, now they're in a bad position where they look bad if they back down. They look bad if they move forward. It wasn't an issue until they made it an issue, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I just, you know, was so kind of conflicted on it. Kind of a related question. Would you ever have him on a HOPE conference again?
It's not my decision. I mean, I don't decree who speaks and who doesn't. But I would imagine that many in the HOPE staff would have profound problems with that. And I respect that.
Yeah, I can see it on both sides.
Well, I mean, it's a good discussion. Absolutely, it's a good discussion. We should talk about it. We should definitely present pros and cons. But, you know, you have to be sensitive to people who are hurt by actions and by things in the past. You have to listen to them. You have to respect them. And it doesn't seem like that's what's happening.
We're also...
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
I just want to add, we're also in an environment that's evolved and evolving. So we need to kind of respect change and different attitudes and really kind of listen for it. So I don't know. It's something that we're going to continue to follow, but it's going to have to be a little bit less... hostile, I guess, in commanding leadership, just by decree, even like by decree.
Yeah, and it doesn't get less hostile by actions like this. That makes it more hostile, and it's not a good thing. I believe, Rob, you have something.
Yeah, the thing about this is the manner in which it was done, and you know, even before that, I personally, and I speak only for myself here, no, not for anyone else on these airwaves, I don't presume to do that, but, you know, just for myself, I'm fine leaving him out of everything forevermore, because I believe the things that people with complaints about him have said. But beyond that, like, the way in which he was put back into the organization, the way the Free Software Foundation did it covertly, the way they hid this from people running their own events that was going on at the same time, the way they, you know, they could have put it out there, you know, in the spirit of free software, in the spirit of the open source community, and said, you know, here's an issue that we're facing, here's a choice we have to make.
Help us decide. Help us decide. Yeah, give us your input. You're
discussion.
Right. Uh-huh. And that's a very good parallel. That's a very good comparison you're making, Rob. It's, you know, the free software, the values of free software, if they had applied that to something like this, it would have been a much healthier discussion, at least, you know, and it wouldn't be quite so negative. Alex, I think you want to say something, too?
Yeah, I mean, putting the merits or the demerits of the allegations against Richard Stallman to one side, following up on Rob's point that the board did this in an absolutely idiotic way, is also the fact that the board did this in a way that was completely antithetical to the best interests of the Free Software Foundation itself. Because by putting this guy back on the board, you are going to definitely lose a hell of a lot of donations, corporate support.
Yeah,
a lot of these big companies that are sending money over to the Free Software Foundation, you know, are no longer going to do that. And just also as a matter of corporate governance here, as you know, this is a nonprofit corporation, but as a nonprofit, one thing that should be considered for nonprofits that would avoid the situation from happening in the future would be to require term limits for certain board members. Because if there were term limits on board members for nonprofits, arguably like there should be, Richard Stallman wouldn't be a member of that board, and you'd have a constant refreshing of new blood coming on that board, let's say every decade. Because the people that voted to bring him back in obviously don't share the same kind of sentiment that we do in this decade, in this time and age. If there were term limits, I think there would be a greater likelihood of people sharing those sentiments.
Sheila?
I think that, Alex, what you're saying may or may not be true, because I could also see that regardless of what the rules are, there being like an ex officio carve-out for someone in that kind of a position. So I'm not sure how corporate governance on the board in that way might have gotten, you know, avoided this situation. I think that the fact that the board and the staff seem to be at cross purposes with the announcement in this particular situation was really not helpful for anyone. But I think there's also the bigger question, and again, speaking for myself and myself only, but the bigger question of when do we say, oh, the things that you're good at overshadow or are more important than your behavior and how you make other people in our community feel. And when we continuously say that the behavior of a few people who have indeed done something significant but have made dozens or hundreds of people feel uncomfortable, leave the field because of their experiences, what's the balance that we have to strike when we say one person is more important than all of these others.
Yeah.
What's the message that we're sending?
You know, I think whenever we put people on pedestals, we're almost always disappointed by what they do. And if I can just go back to the polar opposite of what we're talking about here, Dan Kaminsky, there's somebody who resisted fame, resisted being put on a pedestal, and wound up being treasured and valued more than almost anyone. I think we have to look at that to avoid future situations like this, where somebody their personality is so strong, their name means so much, that you're willing to sacrifice the standing of your organization just to keep it. You know, I think there's something to be said for taking a good hard look at where it is you're coming from and what you truly believe in. And unfortunately, that's been exposed by these latest actions. Caller, I sure hope this answers your question, because it definitely opened up the discussion.
Yeah. Well, I know it's a complicated. I just kind of wanted to get everyone's ponderings, and I didn't expect a hard definitive.
Well, it's I'm glad you brought it up, because it's something interesting that should be talked about. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks a lot for taking my call.
All right, thank you for the question and for listening.
Okay. Thank
Take
you.
Care. And our phone number, 802-321-4225, 833-755-2600. We're on for a little while longer here on Off the Hook Overtime, talking about all kinds of... Boy, our listenership doubled. How do people find out what we're talking about? How does that happen? I guess there's an alert that goes out and people jump on. So if you have anything to say or comment or ask us a question that's going to provoke a discussion that will go on forever, right ahead.
Or just thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening. I like that he was driving through New York and listened to us. A confession here. We have caller ID, and I recognize the name here as somebody who might have been involved with Bob Fass. Is that true, caller?
Yes, it's true.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't mean to pry. I feel like I violated your privacy by looking at your name. But tell us. Tell us.
Hold on 1 second while I lower my YouTube. My YouTube.
Lower your YouTube. Yeah, that's... Welcome to the 21st century.
What kind of delay this between live phone calls and YouTube versus the phone?
It's at least a minute.
Out.
Yeah.
Yes, that's my name.
Can I say your name?
Sure.
Bill Propp, who was affiliated with Bob Fass on his radio show, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. He was the founder, and I was the... I'm listed somewhere in the papers as a co-host or something like that. I was just very honored and glad and privileged to be part of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think we all felt that way, just as listeners or people who witnessed this. It was truly magic.
By the way, there was a Zoom conference last night after the funeral, and portions of that may be broadcast in his time slot tomorrow on Radio Unnameable, what used to be Radio Unnameable on Zoom. Linda Perry has to edit it, I think, because there have been a lot of bleeps, which will be bleeped out.
At a funeral? I guess Bob Fass's funeral, there would be some bleeps.
Well, no, it wasn't at his funeral. No. This was afterwards. Yeah, that later on, last night, in fact.
It was like the
about an hour
break.
Or so of free-for-all on Zoom.
Oh.
And those things had some things which probably have to be edited out, even though, because of the Carlin case, there's so-called safe harbor law, but it's more complicated than that, I'm afraid.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I enjoyed listening to the last hour and this hour, too, including the other material. I don't know where to begin, but I don't want to hog the phone, so cut me off if I'm...
No, go right ahead. We want to hear what you have to say.
By the way, when you gave it on the tape you played of Bob, there was the old phone number, Oxford 72288.
Yeah, that was something.
Around the same time, when I was still in high school, there was, maybe you've heard of it, there was something known as the Anti-Digit Dialing League.
No, who were they all about?
Well, they didn't want names like, Murray Hill 8, Oxford 7. They wanted straight numbers. It was all a put-on, of course.
Well, they got what they wanted. Nobody uses that system anymore.
I don't know if that was a good thing, but I remember in high school it was the anti-digit dialing league.
So for those who don't know, and there's probably a lot of people who don't know, Oxford 7, how that worked was you took the first two letters of the word Oxford. So it would be O and X. So O, I believe, is 6, and X is 9. So it would be 6, 9, 7.
I'm looking now. Yeah, O is a 6. I had to look.
And X is 9, correct?
X is 9, correct.
All right, so and I don't know why they did it that way, but exchanges were named after very like Pennsylvania 6 5000, you know.
Exactly. And it was a good song.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't know what made the names cuz you know, Hotel Pennsylvania wasn't in Pennsylvania.
Statler Hilton, actually. It changed its name back and forth several times.
Yeah, but did they name the phone exchange after the hotel? Is that what they did?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Well, now I have to find out. Anyway, tell us some stories or facts.
Well, going back on from that tape, I was just reminiscing. There was something known as the sweep-in from 1967. I was in that very first sweep-in.
Wow.
Where they chose one block on the Lower East Side to clean it up. And embarrassing the sanitation department, which marginalized that whole area. And so once they came and showed, and when they showed up, it was completely clean. So they had to move to another block, you know, not to lose space.
So there was a garbage strike going on, and Bob Fass would get his listeners to show up downtown and clean an entire street.
Yep, they had brooms, and I think even Richie Havens, I think, did a song for it, sweep, sweep, sweepy, broom, 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 something like that.
Wow.
That goes on a long time. And when they used to sign off, at the end of the night, when Bob was usually on midnight till 5 or so, and then it was only monophonic, by the way.
Okay.
And somebody whoever came in at 6 o'clock had to turn on the transmitter again. But before they signed off, they had to give the frequency and the transmitting power. So I think Steve Post may have innovated this particular thing. We are broadcasting at 5.41 kilowatts horizontal and 3.8 watts vertical. Depending upon whether you're lying down or standing up.
Well, did you hear the sign-off that we played the last hour?
Yes. We were trying to find that for last day or two ago. We wanted to play that maybe at the funeral. But that little girl saying,
yeah.
Her name was Evie Bookie. Evie Bookie.
Now, did they play the little kid saying goodbye every night the station signed off?
Pretty much, yes.
Wow.
That's the last thing you heard before you heard white noise.
That's amazing. See, that's what I'm talking about as far as preserving things.
Yeah.
I'm just happy somebody.
I'm sorry.
I'm happy somebody recorded that.
Star Spangled Banner.
No, they never played the Star Spangled Banner.
No. Although Jose Feliciano once appeared alive, I guess, a long time ago, and he was like pretty much blackballed for years because he added a little grace note into the when he sang it at the World Series, I think. And the whole embrace. And it was heresy to do that.
That was
so
enough.
He was like marginalized for a long time. Robert Klein has a bit on that too. One of his early albums about how they ruined Jose Feliciano for a long time.
Wow.
And by the way, it's a small world story. You know, you may know this. I'm sure you do. Bob's lovely wife, Lenny, who I know, worked for Marty Garbus.
I did know that. In fact, I had many conversations with her during our DECSS case in 2000. She still is a very nice woman and sent greetings from Bob many times. And of course, I saw Bob at the station quite a few times as well. But, yeah, it is a small world.
And, let's see. Another small world thing. I don't know if did Frank Zappa's name came up. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they mentioned a lot of Frank Zappa. He was a guest, too. And I went to high school with his percussionist, Ruthie, who was married to Ian Underwood. That's on one of his albums, a double album called We're Only In It for the Money. And they're all dressed in drag. But let's see, what else did I not leave?
Well, when is the first time that you actually went into the station?
Okay.
Can you remember that?
First time, yeah. I never made it to 30 East 39th Street. By the way, William F. Buckley, he in that time had a program too on there.
William F. Buckley had a radio show on WBAI?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't remember hearing it, but Bob said so, yeah.
And I take it he was conservative back then as well.
You take it correctly. And so did, who was the one, Positivism, what's her name? Another conservative woman. He had a long-running program on BAI. I'm blanking out now. I have stage fright.
Anyway, how could you have stage fright? You've been involved for so long with
well, that's part of when I first met him. I had first met Bob probably in 60, must have been 66, 67, 68, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And I went up to, there was a Woodstock Socrates Sound Out Festival, music on an open field, in the actual Woodstock Socrates town, not where... You know, the big one was held a year later.
Uh-huh.
So in 68, I went there. It was called Pam's Farm, Pam Copeland had a farm up there. And for two or three days, he could sleep out on the ground. Buzzy Linhart was there, Tim Harden, Richie Havens. Oh, it was a great time. It was a running, it was a regular thing. I went there the year before the big Woodstock, which I did not attend. And that's when I saw Bob. I really didn't talk to him much then. He was there. But the first time I actually encountered him or met him, maybe the Sweetman at around the same time, but later, I was driving a cab from 70 to 74. Even though I was already out of college, I had nothing, no prospect. So there I was. I used to drive around, and when they moved to East 62nd Street, the church, I used to drive around recording stuff because I had a little Ampex recorder built into my radio. It was great. So I heard Larry Sloman, who did a parody of Bob Dylan, knocking on BAI's door. And I recorded that once, and then years later, he's back again as a guest. And he's kind of more reminiscing about Bob. Oh, wish I had that other one, you know, from then. So I parked my cab in front of my building, which was right near where I am now.
Uh-huh.
And I found the thing on a cassette, rummaged through, played a few bars, hung up just to tantalize them. And then they called, who was that masked man? You know. So I came over with the tape.
Wow.
I was greeted warmly by Bob Ratso. And I think Wadey Grady was in the studio then too, so I sat down. They made copies of it, and that was the beginning. I never left after that, more or less.
So basically, because you recorded something off the radio, that was your foot in the door to get involved in radio.
Pretty much. I had no idea even then, though, that I'd be. Oh, I considered myself a listener, as I still do from a lot of BA on, and I had no dreams or intentions to move in any way, shape, or form. There was a staff there. I thought I was, you know, wholly unqualified. You know, if I had to go on the air, I would have sounded like, hum-a-hum-a-hum-a-hum-a, you know.
Trust me, we all feel that way at the beginning. I just found some early tapes of when I first got involved in radio, and I cannot believe they ever asked me to come back. Cannot believe it.
It's what you had to say.
And I'm going to make those public, too, so people can maybe get inspired. If he can do it, anyone can.
You're gone. Steve Post had, he said some of the people there came from the Lompoc School of Broadcasting.
I know where
that is.
That's
the penitentiary, Pedal Pen, where H.R. Haldeman spent some time.
Oh, okay.
In California, the Lompoc. It sounded like a disease, I know.
Wow.
So going ahead, so I was pretty much at his side for like 20 years or so from I don't know. And I was annotating reel-to-reel boxes as to who came by. Buzzy Linhart. Gary Knoll came by once. I didn't know it at the time. Bob showed me a reel-to-reel many years later, and I had written his name, K-N-O-L-L, the way it sounded, Gary Knoll.
Wow.
Bob put him on because he was banned and fired from a commercial station, WMCA, I believe it was.
Okay.
So Bob gave him a voice. And years later, you know, he had a program. He's the main, one of the main draws.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Bob was banned and fired, too.
That's right.
It's all a big circle.
Several times, yeah. It's kind of a badge of honor, in a way. Mm-hmm. A dubious band, it's a badge of honor. So from 70, and 80, in 86, they raised $30,000 on the last day of the marathon, and Bob Dylan was supposed to call in on phone personally, and he did. I was to watch out. He's going to give an alias, like Blind Boy Grunt or, you know, something. And so I took the call, put it in, Bob put it on the air, and then Dylan was a sport. He took phone calls. This went on for about 45 minutes on the last day of a thon.
Wow.
And including there's one call you may have heard of him. He's the guy who goes, Commie Nudie. Even he got on. Dylan was a good sport. And then that was in 1986, Dylan's 45th birthday. So jump ahead. I'm still there, but I was always sitting at his side, but I didn't consider I was airworthy. Maybe I'm still not. I don't know.
No, you absolutely are. Absolutely are. You should do a show of just reminiscing about these things every week, I think.
I would love to. But so jumping ahead, though, Bob and Lenny have been living together for a while. He decided to get married. This was in, I don't know, it must have been 1993, I think it was. I had known him since 60. Well, I mean, since starting 60, whatever I said, in the early 70s, driving a cab. So I was there all the time. I knew it all in theory, what he was doing. I helped. Sometimes I went on the air just briefly to say something, or correction, or wisecrack. And so, but he said, "Okay, Bill, I'm going away to get married. I'll be back in 3 weeks." Bye. And there I was, completely green.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was the old analog board, which I loved, you know, because it allowed 10 callers to get on the phone at one time, and each one had a potentiometer. You could see who was the cranky.
I remember that. I remember that board.
I love that.
That was
board.
At 35th Street, too, right? And I remember the amber lights.
Originally, it was there, yeah.
That went down the side?
I love that board. They just destroyed it. Mike Edel, I think, built it at the time.
Uh-huh.
The best chief engineer we ever had, in my opinion.
My very first show, I tried to get every single line connected, and we had an online or an on-air conference call. As sort of a rebuttal to all the ones that were being advertised for lots of money, people could call and be AI and be in a conference for free.
Right. It was great. And it was a delicate task, but you know, usually it worked. And if it was any cranks, you could, if really persistent, you could get rid of them. So there I was all alone for 3 weeks having to come up with program material. And I was petrified. It was like, you know, the first hour was really, you know, it was a white-knuckle flight, you know, grasping and panic and shaking. And but I took phone calls at some point in the second hour, and everybody seemed to behave themselves. I got almost 10 calls on at once, the capacity, and maybe it's beginner's luck, I don't know, but the first one went well, and I did three more of them until he came back, and I thanked him and honored, and I said, how could you do this to me? We were lifelong friends ever since. He was my oldest, best friend I ever had, or ever will have him. I hope not, but
well,
our
sincere condolences for the loss. It's one that we all feel.
Yeah.
He was a giant. He personified what BAI was all about, and he influenced so many people, gave airtime to so many. He changed the world. He absolutely changed the world.
He absolutely did. Yes. Oh, I've said I'm blown my piece, I guess. But I'll be glad to do anything more in either for the station or in his honor, and
well,
I hope to do that.
Please stay in touch, and if you have material, by all means, preserve that material, share that material, digitize, whatever, because this is history, it's valuable, it's something that we all can learn from.
Yes, it is. I really do miss this, and I hope to continue this in his honor. Thank you. Thank you for being there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bill Prump. Wow. That's incredible. That really is incredible. It makes you realize just how big a deal this is. You know, how big a deal Bob Fass was. And it's strange because, you know, we make such a fuss over the superstars without realizing that they all came from someplace and that the real stars are the ones that aren't in the limelight, the ones that are just there. You know, and that you can count on, that will open the door for you, and that have this quiet confidence in themselves, in what they do. And there's so many of us out there that I think fit that definition that I'm honored to know. Shall we take another phone call? I think we have another phone call. Okay, let's go ahead. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask Bill Prop to phone me.
Okay.
I can't find his phone number. I wanted to try to get in touch with him.
Well, I'm sure he'll hear this, and he's gotten the message, and maybe your phone will ring. Thanks. Thanks for the second call. Please, people out there, we're opening up for first-time callers or people who haven't called today. 802-321-4225. Folks, what do you think of Bill's reminiscing there? I could talk to him all night, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely fantastic, fascinating to hear. And hearing about the technology that was used way back then, too, is really fascinating. I would love to hear the Off the Hook show where you had the impromptu conference call.
Well, just go to the website, 2600.com/off the hook, and I think it's the first one in 1988.
You're kidding. Was it the first one?
It was the first one, yeah, because, you know, I was new. I was trying to make an impression and do something different. And, the first time, I was supposed to be on in the afternoon, and it was literally that hour that there was a fire in the transmitter room of the Empire State Building, and all the stations in New York City were knocked off the air. And I realized, you know, I had my show canceled, my debut show, but I realized all the stations, they were, you know, playing music. I was the only person that really was affected by that. Everybody else just went in the next day and did their usual show. But I was the only person that had a damn radio show that had it canceled, and I wasn't able to go on again for months. But when I did go on, it was for an extended period of time, and it was at night, so I was able to do more. So maybe that fire was a good thing in the long term, but it's just crazy how radio history unfolds.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think it's fascinating. I mean, I feel like the show started out at 7 o'clock as potentially as one long dirge for Dan Kaminsky and Bob Fast, but all of these anecdotes, I think, are giving me a lot of heart, and I hope uplifting the listeners as well.
Well, it's interesting, too. There's a parallel that I noticed when Bill was speaking just now. Of somebody doing something because they're interested in doing it, because they love doing it. What Bob did with radio turned into something huge. What Dan did with Internet security turned into something huge. They both developed these tremendous followings, and neither one of them was attracted by the limelight. They didn't seek it out, and they were so much better for that, you know, for just being themselves and for being valued as that. They didn't get rich. They weren't superstars, at least not in the in the Hollywood sense, but in how we view them in our minds, yeah, they mattered so much, and we miss them so much already.
I always hear this certain gravity too of these people, their charisma, what it attracts, and that passion for the medium they're working in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I've got that that other piece from Dan I'd like to play. Basically, this is an excerpt of Off the Hook. I know he was on Off the Hook a few times. He was on, I think, once with Tiffany Redd, which is an interesting show. But this was when a bunch of us were over in Berlin at the annual Chaos Communication Congress. And he was one of the people who stopped by, and I think he just gives his impressions of the conference of Berlin. Let's listen for a moment.
Speaking of hope, one of the next Hope's keynote speakers, Dan Kaminsky, is here with us. And Dan, you've been over here before, have you not?
I have been. I've been here every year since about 2004. There's something to be said about a city where there's a 250,000 people on the street for New Year's. It's like nowhere else I've ever been.
Yeah, you know, New Year's is great in Berlin because everybody is shooting fireworks off. It's not professional. It's just all the people.
Well, let me tell you, it's not professional.
I mean, infants and dogs, everybody gets involved. Yeah. It's something else. It's a real festive occasion, and it's perfectly suited for the end of CCC.
Mm-hmm. These aren't Roman candle fireworks.
No.
These are real rockets.
In fact, one of the big hacker spaces of the world actually is a place called Seabase. Their entire place is themed like a crashed spaceship, and every year for New Year's they let off, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of euros of serious munition grade fireworks. It's right by the water, so you look up and you see fire, you look down you see fire. You know, there's kind of a theme. It's called fire.
And pretty much every block that you stand on, there are people just lighting things and shooting things from one building to another. It's quite a sight to behold. But, Dan, speaking to the conference itself, where there hasn't been so much in the way of fireworks and things being shot at this point.
The night is young.
Yeah, that's true. We're in day three, actually, of the four-day conference. Tomorrow is the last day. But are there any highlights that you'd like to focus on?
Well, you know, CCC is really about the people. It's really about a collection of very smart people who are willing to just sit back, kick back, and talk about interesting things. I mean, you know, a common thing that's spoken about conferences is the hallway track. You know, who are you actually going to bump into? One guy who's been doing some incredible work goes by the name of Matt Seuss. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. He's been working on something called Crypto Mini Sat. And this is one of the most obscure yet ridiculously useful things in all of security right now. You have these algorithms that are breaking theoretically impossible to crack problems, and they're breaking them in seconds. It's become a revolution in mathematics.
And what the thing is you can convert all these other problems into this domain and then throw them at these standardized tools. I walk into Saul 3 earlier today, you know, the third room, and there's Matt. I've been exchanging emails with him for months. He's just sitting up there talking about his cool code and, you know, get to bump into him later. And that's really what CCC is about. All sorts of really interesting people working on cool stuff, and it's no big deal. Walk up, have a conversation, and, you know, change the world.
Well, Dan, he did change the world. That was from December 29th, 2010, from Berlin at the Chaos Communication Congress. As we remember Dan Kaminsky, we remember Bob Fass, and I think we're pretty much finished for the night, folks. Any final words?
I think that is a perfect tone and the perfect words on which to end.
All right. Well, everyone's nodding their heads, so I guess that's where we're going to leave it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for the calls. Please continue to write to us, oth@2600.com, and you can tweet at us, Hacker Radio Show. And we will be back next week, 7 p.m. on WVAI, 8 p.m. on YouTube, for Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime. This is Emmanuel. Have a good night.